You can ask your animals either within your mind or out loud. You can show them pictures with your mind and just kind of send the intention, hey, I want to try to communicate with you. Can you help me? Mm-hmm. And then you can ask them questions that, number one, you do not know the answer to, because when the information comes in, it's going to be a little bit off kilter. Like, wait, where did that come from? Was that actually my thought? So I would just play around with it. Like, ask them questions that you are not emotionally attached to. One that you might not know the answer to, or assume you know the answer to, and just see what happens.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purple Stars podcast. I'm Sarah, your host. And as you can hear in my voice, I am so thrilled about today's guest. She is the founder of Deep Root Connections and one of the most renowned channels for animals and nature spirits. And she is here to share all her wisdom with us. And I'm just so grateful. Please welcome Kara Daniels.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are just so thrilled. As I shared earlier with you, someone of our audience reached out and said, you gotta have this girl on your show. She's just so amazing. And I then listened to one of your interviews and I was just so blown away. And for anyone in the audience who doesn't know you yet, could you share a little bit about your journey and also what has helped you, like, you know, deepen your connection and relationship with animals and nature and the unseen, and also to help others to have the same magical, deep connections?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my journey really has been a lifelong one, and it has had many ups and many downs, as journeys go, of course. But to give you a little bit of my background, you know, I was definitely that child who ran barefoot with messy hair, would play with sticks and worms and mud puddles. Like, that was me all the way. So I was just naturally kind of born a wild child. I loved nature. I loved animals. That's kind of where I really felt like my heart sang. And that really has been the driving force with all of my actions and decisions moving forward into my adulthood now. I studied wildlife conservation and habitat management. And so I took a scientific route, thinking I would be a biologist saving the animals or doing research or something like that. But that didn't quite work out. I just didn't really feel aligned within that space. And so after about 10 years of really trying to conform, I just couldn't anymore. I felt like I was getting blocked. I was stuck. I couldn't progress. And I was just frustrated. And so what I did was I took a step back and I just said, all right, like, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? I have this really deep calling to make a big difference. It has to do with nature and animals. I just don't know what it is, but somebody please help me. I just kind of hit my breaking point. And after I just kind of put that out into the universe, about 2 weeks later, a coworker of mine came to me and said, hey, I have this stray cat. I don't know what to do with her. Can you help me? And I said, of course. Like, just if you can bring her to me, I'll find her home or whatever needs to be done. I'm happy to help. So he brings me this beautiful kitty. She's fully pregnant. And I thought, oh, okay, well, we can't just rehome you right now because you're about to have babies. And so I ended up keeping her for about 3 months. She had her kittens with me and it was so wonderful. But what happened was I couldn't name her. And that's really unusual for me. When I meet an animal, it's like, this is going to be your name. Well, that's not what happened with her. I had her for 3 months and I'm just looking at her. What is your name? I can't name you. This is the weirdest thing. And so after she had her kittens, I was sitting outside with her in their little enclosure, watching all the kittens play. It was just a wonderful moment. We were surrounded by the trees. And then all of a sudden, I felt her eyes staring at me almost like so intensely that it caught my attention. I wasn't looking at her, but I could feel her staring at me. And so I looked at her and I thought, what is your name? And immediately I heard it. She said, Samantha. And then all of the little kittens that were running around us also started communicating. They're like, oh, this is my name, my name, my name. It's just all these little tiny voices. And I thought, oh my gosh, the cats just talked to me. This is amazing. And the good thing about that was, like, I had used animal communicators in the past. I just didn't think I was somebody that could access that gift, I guess. And so when that happened, I thought, oh my gosh, how do I do this again? How do I repeat the process? And so that really just kind of pushed a boulder off of a hill for me. I dove headfirst into learning about animal communication. I ended up opening up a business to help people connect in with their animals. And after a while, I found that I was getting called back to nature and the trees. I was kind of feeling stuck again. And the animals told me, well, go to the trees and find yourself a tree guide. And then the trees started talking to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, this is incredible. How come nobody is talking about this? And so ever since then, it's kind of been a goal of mine to just spread the word that there's so much more to the beings of the land and our animals than we could ever imagine. So that is my short version of the journey.
I love that. And you know what I love most about this journey? That you just went with it. You know, like you didn't resist your path, because I think one of the biggest sufferings in our life comes from resisting our path, whether it's on our personal life, our professional life, with our health, like with anything. And you literally listen to your calling. And I find that so, so, so beautiful. Kara, given that, like, considering you have a science background, could you explain for people that are skeptical when it comes to animal communication and tree communication, could you explain in a very down-to-earth way what it is and also what intention and purpose it has?
Of course. Yeah. And honestly, that is something that I really dove deep into also, because with that science mind, I was like, how does this work? I need some kind of explanation. And, you know, when it comes to studying energy, I will be the first one to admit, like, a lot of it's over my head. But the way that I understand any of this at all is just leaning into the concept that everything is energy. Everything has energy, including our emotions, our thoughts, our physical body, and we radiate that energy outwards. Animals and trees, you know, absolutely everything has energy and can radiate energy outward. Now, I know trees don't have a formal brain, for example, so we're going to use this specifically with animal communication, but animals have thoughts and feelings and emotions, and all of that radiates outwards. And so as an animal communicator, all it really is picking up on the energy coming from the animal and being able to translate it. And the way that this really works is we have our intuitive senses, subtle senses or psychic senses, you know, whatever words you want to use there to label it. But we have our clear feeling, which is where we can feel others' emotions or physical pain. We can know things without really understanding where it comes from, that inner wisdom, that inner knowing. We can hear things, messages, information coming from other beings within our inner hearing. It often comes through in thought form. We also have inner vision, or our inner sight, which is like that space of imagination where when an animal is communicating, the translation will be in pictures. So all of those subtle senses is really how information can go from one being to another without using the verbal language that humans really rely on. And so it really is just a decoding of energy with our own physical body and through our mind.
What a great explanation. I love that. And I'm so, so happy you brought up that the decoding of the language can come like in form of pictures. It can come in form of thoughts, like audio, also in the form of feelings. And I think that's so great that you bring that up, because we are all wired differently. You know, when we look back, when we still went to school, everyone has a different type of studying. Some are more like auditive, some are like more visual. And I think it's so important to also explore, you know, like what is your decoding language and what does it come out and what does it come out with? And I can imagine it might even be different. Like, let's say someone has two animals, it might be different with both, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I always, like when I teach my students, I show them a triangle or the filtration system or like the different variables of how beings communicate, because we are our own translator and antenna. So we receive in certain ways, some areas are stronger than others, but then the animals or whoever else that we're communicating with have their own strengths and preferences for communication. I have a dog. I just pick up on his energy constantly, his emotions, that inner knowing. But my other dog, she'll chat my ear off if I give her the space. She's like, hey, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, shh. So it really is unique to the individual trying to communicate. But the nice thing about animals and the nature beings is they try their best to match their style to yours so that translation is a little bit more fluid. But you're right, everybody has their own way.
Mm-hmm. And also you just mentioned the word everybody. I was listening to one of your interviews and you said everybody can communicate with their animals. Mm-hmm. And you also said often you find that your clients that are already fluently communicating with their pets, but they just don't realize it yet. And what are tips for people that want to tap into their own intuitive communication with their pets? What are some ways that they can get started? And also, you know, that they trust their intuition, because I think people often go to channels and mediums and, you know, like all sorts of people, because not because they don't know anything, but because they don't trust with what they feel and what they hear. And I guess you probably often hear, oh yeah, totally, I already felt that. Oh yeah. So it's very often a reassurance. But I'm wondering, like, what can people do to, you know, like start?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a great question. And I will just kind of prelude that communicating with our own animals and trusting the process is the hardest. And I will be the first to admit that when I'm in a sticky situation, I call my friends that I trust and say, hey, can you check me here? Because I'm too emotionally invested. I don't know if I'm being a clear channel. And so I think that's something that a lot of people need to understand, is that when we cannot be in a neutral state of being or receiving, we manipulate the answers, which is why it's complicated with our own animals, not to deter anybody from trying. But number one, they're already communicating with you. It's just not like a punch in the face or like a really big kind of feeling, because your energy is so entangled and intertwined already that it's more of a fluid connection. It's like, oh, I think I'm going to go for a walk today. And your dog's like sitting there by the door waiting. That thought probably came from your dog saying, hey, let's go for a walk today. Mm-hmm. Or even just sometimes if you're walking around, you're like, I should go check my horse's water trough. And then you go out there and it's like, oh, it needs to be filled, or it's a little dirty. You know, it's like these thoughts that we have throughout the day, especially when it's correlated with our animals, that's them trying to communicate with us. So that's one, you're already doing it. It's just harder to recognize. So what I would do if you are interested in kind of playing around with it is, number one, I would start to recognize what's going on within your internal body first, because you have to know what's going on within to know what's coming in that's not yours. But you can ask your animals either within your mind or out loud. You can show them pictures with your mind and just kind of send the intention, hey, I want to try to communicate with you. Can you help me? Mm-hmm. And then you can ask them questions that, number one, you do not know the answer to, because when the information comes in, it's going to be a little bit off kilter. Like, wait, where did that come from? Was that actually my thought? So I would just play around with it. Like, ask them questions that you are not emotionally attached to. One that you might not know the answer to, or assume you know the answer to, and just see what happens. Ask them to show you images within your third eye or within your heart or even auditory, and just set your intention, go into meditation if that helps, and just start playing with it. I mean, I would just say asking is the first step, and then waiting for that something to come in.
It's great you brought up that often we can be biased or distracted because we're like, you know, all interconnected with the emotions. And I was on a podcast yesterday and we talked about surrogate tapping for animals. And I said the very first thing when we do that, or for anyone, even not just for pets, but if we do a tapping for someone else, is to first neutralize our emotions that are related with that situation and that person. Because otherwise, as you said, like we want to have a certain outcome, or we might be so blinded by our anger, our frustration, our fear, or paralyzed by it that we can't even be of help. So I love that you say, you know, like either you manage to step out of this for a second, or you actually ask someone that you trust for help in that situation. And I am a big fan of practicing, as you said, like with non-emotionally charged situations. And it could even be, I guess, something like, which treat do you like more, right? Could be like something small, like that's not so emotionally charged.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I always tell my students, like, ask them what their favorite color is. And I know people mm-hmm. are like, well, they're colorblind. Well, they can still feel frequencies, but you can ask yeah. them, or be really weird about it and just say, where are you from? Are you mm-hmm. actually a dog in there? You know, just see what they have to say. Just be playful and the information will come. Mm-hmm. And it usually is something that you wouldn't normally think of. It kind of feels like it comes out of the blue. And that's kind of one of the tells that your mm-hmm. animal is communicating with you versus your own imagination and thought.
I love that. And, you know, one of the things that I do when I communicate is also asking them to give me signs via songs. So I ask a question and then I like listen to the first song and like, and it's amazing, like that's the stuff that comes up. So I think like just be playful with how you want to communicate with them, and it could be like different every day. I just know my dog is so musical. You should see him when I play Beyonce. It is insane. Like he gets, I actually think he was Beyonce, maybe not a laugh, because he gets so excited, like all like, and it's just so funny. So that's why I pick as one of the ways to communicate with him, also music. Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing. I can totally see his so, jamming out.
Yeah, so funny. Do you have any books or maybe one of your courses recommendations if people want to, you know, like, test the waters, like just in addition, obviously, to booking you, but if they want to like do some homework themselves.
Yes, I think homework is really important and learning from a lot of different practitioners can be helpful. Let's see, books. So animal communication specifically, Penelope Smith has some really wonderful books out there. She's kind of my go-to. Her and Tammy Billups. So if you are interested in learning more about kind of soul contracts, why your animals are in your life, she, ooh, I just got the chills with that.
Me too. I was so happy you brought that up.
She's wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful. Her books, all of her books are amazing. So those are the two authors that I would recommend kind of upfront with specifically animals.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I'll put them in the show notes so people later on can look that up. I want to follow up on the soul contracts. Not something I planned, but I'm really happy you bring that up. I always say animals find us. That's my way to put it in words. If you obviously use spiritual language, it could also be we have soul contracts. Everyone, like, you know, a pet serves their purpose. Yesterday when I was in a podcast, she shared actually a story that made me tear up. And she said she got her dog while she really wanted to get pregnant. So he had been her baby for a really long time. Once the baby was here, he passed away.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, he served the purpose. He prepped her to also embody how it is to be a mom and to be okay, even if you have anxiety. And you don't need to be fully, like, you know, have fixed your anxiety to be a good mom. And yeah, it just, it touched me so deeply in my heart. And I do really, really believe we serve a purpose in each other's lives. And for me, for example, I know Felix is really teaching me a lot of patience. And patience as in everything happens in its own divine timing. So, and like, he's showing me this in so many different ways. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the bigger picture? But maybe also if we break it down to mirroring principle, you know, like especially when it comes to physical symptoms or also behavior.
Oh, I know, yeah.
It's a loaded question.
I know. We might have to peel this one back in layers. I agree. I think the animals in our lives, for better or for worse, are here to teach us lessons of all kinds, mm-hmm. whether that is truly to just learn how to love. That's kind of a big one. A lot of people that hold trauma or are unable to love themselves or other people, the animals can kind of come in and crack open their heart and give them that ability to, give them the ability to learn how to love in a safe space. The more challenging behaviors are always, they're loaded with emotions and all sorts of stuff. And I have my own example of that, and I'll use him. So I adopted this dog. He had an interesting upbringing. He had 6 homes before he ended up being my forever dog, but he came with some baggage. So mm-hmm. when he was born, he was taken from mama too soon. And then he had 6 different foster homes. Nobody really did much with him. So he just didn't know how to be a dog. Mm-hmm. And so he's extremely sensitive. He's reactive, fear, aggression. I mean, he's bit me. He has attacked my other dog. I mean, this was just a really complicated situation. But he also kind of embodies that mirroring. So he and I are very entangled. I brought him into the home. He was okay. But then when I realized that maybe he didn't quite fit in or he had some trauma that we had to work through, my anxiety spiked, my stress spiked, mm-hmm. and so did his. And he's still like this to this day. Not quite as aggressive. We've really navigated that. But mm-hmm. the mirroring aspect, if I'm stressed and anxious, so is he. Mm-hmm. And he will actually start to develop tendencies, like he'll lick his feet, he'll start chewing. So he literally lets me know where I am on my spectrum. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's like, all right, I got it. Like, we got to go for a walk now, or mm-hmm. we just need to decompress somehow. So he definitely mirrors me in a lot of ways, which is nice, but it's also kind of a pain in the butt because sometimes I want to be stressed and I need that. And I need him to not be, you know? So that's kind of something that animals do on the emotional field. And that's just one example. So he's teaching me kind of to recognize my own self-awareness and handle my anxiety, which is something that I have struggled with my whole life. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have it good now mostly, but it's still touch and go. And then with some of my clients, there's physical attributes too. So mm-hmm. if a human has some physical discomforts, pain, illness, a lot of times the animals will embody that also and kind of mirror their physical pain backward or back to them. And mm-hmm. and sometimes it's contractual or sometimes it's just like, hey, like we need to address this, but you're not. So it kind of depends. It's very convoluted. There's tons of different contracts out there, but I would just say check out your own animals and notice how they are interacting with you and what lessons they have to teach.
For me, this is one of the most fascinating feels. Like it's something I can think about all day. Like it's just, it makes me so excited. And I'm like, wow, isn't this just so insane? Like the mirroring and like, you know, especially when you think of a rescue dog, like the dog traveled all these miles and it's just, and we have like similar challenges and things that we can heal on both ends. And what I find probably the most interesting is the physical part, because I think like fear and I think it's like with anything, when we walk into a room, even with strangers, and there's this tension, like it immediately, you know, like can also make us feel tensed up. And what I find quite interesting that is the mirror principle when it's not yet that obvious. So with obvious, I mean, okay, the owner has digestive issues, the dog too. But interesting is, for example, if the owner is very anxious and the dog then starts to get ear infections. you know, like, and ears are related in Chinese medicine a lot with the fear. So I find that even more interesting, because I'm like, you know, you gotta dive even deeper. And it's just so beautiful to see like how much they love us, that they are willing to go for certain things to also help us. And that's something I find amazing. And Felix picks up a lot on my energy and on my stress as well. And you know what I have started to do now? I have conversations with him where I say, I thank you so much for showing me that, but I want you to know we have a very strong bond, even if you don't pick up on it as much. And then like I try to cleanse him and I say, you know, like, we have this strong bond, but we can let go of whatever you need to mirror me today. I know I'm stressed, or I know I'm anxious about this. So I just keep telling him. I just started a few days ago, but I do notice already a little shift in that.
I love that approach. I might have to recommend that to some of my people.
Mm-hmm. It's just communication again, right?
Yeah, just being open. And I mm-hmm. think just acknowledging that they're here to show us and teach us certain things is like step one.
Oh yeah, definitely. Big step. Yep. Absolutely. And I listened to one of your interviews where you shared a story about a horse. And it really made me tear up. It made me also tear up when I shared it with someone else after I listened to it. So I hope today not again. But the horse was severely depressed and didn't do very well. Could you share that story? Because it is so moving and touching. And I just think it's such a beautiful example when it comes to what an emotional depth animals can have.
This horse, the woman who contacted me, she was the direct caretaker. The horse's mom had moved with the intention of coming back for her horse at some point, but she was going through a divorce and a really complicated stage of life. So she was just like, I don't know, but for right now, you are the guardian, you are the caretaker of my horse. Just like kind of keep me in the loop. And so the current guardian called me and just said, this horse is not doing well. Can you talk to her? She's losing weight. She's so depressed. It's like the sparkle in her eyes has just dimmed. And this had been a while. Her mom had left for a while. And so when I opened up that connection with this horse, she was just basically saying, I'm trying to hold space for my mom because she left. I didn't know where she went. I don't know when she's coming back, and I don't really know what to do. She's been gone for a while. And so this poor horse was just kind of in limbo. She didn't know how to move forward. She couldn't get any answers because nobody was really talking to her. And so she literally was just like, she would be standing out in the back corner of the field just with her head down low. Now I'm going to get all weepy because it's just so sad. And she was in a lovely facility with other horses, but she just like was in this space of grief. And so when we started talking to her, I could just feel her heart mourning and just that deep sadness. And so we explained to her that her mom really still loves her and that she wanted to come back, but she can't. Like, there's just no way. And so for this horse to call this other guardian mom from now on, that's just going to be the situation. She'll try to come back and visit as soon as she can, if that's possible. And this horse was just like, okay, now I know I can mourn and close that door. But I was trying to keep it open in case mama came back. And so as soon as she went through the mourning process and could move on, she started to gain weight again. Mm-hmm. She started getting a pep in her step. That sparkle came back. And she's doing wonderful now. She's healthy. She's lively. She is older, but she's still a working horse. Like, she takes kids for rides. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, you can feel the smiling radiating from her now. It's just a beautiful story.
The story is, it's so moving, and it shows on so many levels the connection. And I also find it interesting that the horse lost a lot of weight, and that the horse was mourning the mom, because very often also in us humans, losing weight is a mother wound. And it has to, is related with something with the mom that we are longing for and missing. It's, you know, this like, I'm fading away, so hopefully mom comes back and takes care of me. So, wow. I haven't thought about this before when I heard this part of your interview, but like it totally rang the bell. And I'm like, wow, this makes so much sense that it happened this way. And how beautiful, like, how does this make you feel that you know that your conversation with that horse brought the horse back to life?
Oh, it just makes me cry. No, I'm just like going to be a weepy little mess now. the thing is I wish everybody could do this. I wish everybody were having these conversations with these animals. And I just feel so honored to be able to be that person, but I do wish everybody could do it.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy for the horse now. I still see her. She doesn't live very far from me, and it's just like, I'm just so happy to see her and see how she's thriving. It is really a beautiful ending to that story.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And Kara, I'm wondering, if someone books you, for people who have never had a session with an animal communicator, could you describe a little bit, like, what's the procedure? Do they send a picture? Is it remote? Is it in person? Just for people to get a little bit of an idea.
Yeah, so all of my sessions are done remote, at least for now. And so I have people just send me one picture is fine of their animal if they have one.
The cutest.
Yes. Usually I get like 10 pictures. I mean, people just adore their animals. It's wonderful. But one picture is not required, but it helps just to help with that tuning in process, and the name. So that's really the only thing I require. And if you have an overarching goal for the session, I like to have that to kind of just set the intention before tuning in. Otherwise, we hop on a call, a Zoom, whichever is more comfortable for the person. And I always open up my sessions by going over kind of my, I call it first impressions, which is like, this is the energy I'm picking up from your animal. This is what they're showing me. This is their personality. You know, I really bring forward that evidential information so the client knows without a doubt that I am connecting with their animal. That's really important. And then after that, I encourage back and forth, because like, I don't want to dictate the session at all. I want the guardian of the animal too, which people usually have hundreds of questions like, ask my animal this, ask my animal that. And that's the way that I work my sessions, is let's make sure we're connected. Let's make sure we're all on point. And then the client leads. So whatever questions and goals they have for their animal, we just kind of go back and forth that way.
And what are some of the most common questions and issues they would love to have answers for?
There's two kinds of communication sessions, or the way people want to learn more about their animals. And so I kind of chunk this up in evidential information, which is where people want to know if their animal is happy, how they like their food, if they're getting enough exercise, how they are feeling physically. That's a big one. So I always include a body scan to get pain, discomfort. What else they might need, or if they're about to go through some kind of big changes within their family dynamics or moving or whatever might be the case, to let the animal know what's happening beforehand so there's less stress and they get forewarned. And so that's kind of the bulk of my evidential information. There's another side to this, which is kind of the more soul level, esoteric side, which kind of dives into the soul contracts, or where the animals are truly from on a soul level. What is their higher self doing? It's definitely that overarching picture. The more spiritual layers can come forward too. And that's kind of my space. That's like my favorite session to have, is especially with those in the afterlife. What are you doing in the afterlife? What is that like? And so, those sessions are generally geared more towards those in the afterlife, just to see kind of what's going on from an esoteric perspective or soul level perspective. And both kinds of sessions are wonderful, and they're so enlightening. So Yeah, those are generally how and what.
Yeah. I have quite a lot of friends and also clients that ask questions like, my dog is already older. Does he or she want a companion? I think that's all. Or is it time to already go to the other side is a big one. Afterlife, I think also. And I've seen so much healing for the dog parents, especially when afterlife too, when they feel guilty, should they have done more? Did they, you know, like, was it their fault or something that they missed? And so I think it's so beautiful to get that closure. So it's, they can stay connected very much through love and, you know, like really cherish the positive memories rather than when thinking of their pet feeling guilty and feeling, oh my God, I should have done more. And I was just, I don't know why, but I keep thinking about our very first dog. He was a golden retriever. He was a real rebel. Like, we used to live on the countryside. He would go on walks even on his own, like with the neighbor dogs. They would come back. I don't know what it was, just, you know, like how it is in the movie. And recently I've been thinking a lot about him. So I think he must be around. And that day I felt his energy so present. Our dog Felix, and he's a small Shih Tzu mixed with Maltese, he stopped with every single golden retriever. And our dog was a golden retriever, like every single one. He would even sit and wait for the dog to come over. It was so, I was like, yeah, okay, I get it. So it's so beautiful how they just keep revisiting us. And I really, really love that. I could talk about animal communication for hours, but I also want to make sure we talk about trees. So I'm originally from Austria, and in the German-speaking countries, tree communication is quite, I would say, a bigger thing, more than almost as in the US. I remember there was a year the bookstores were, like, there would always be like two tables filled with books. And you probably for sure know him, Peter Wohlleben. Yeah. So do you know, like, his word, his family name translated means living well?
I didn't know that.
I was like, it made me laugh so much when I thought about the translation, because I'm like, wow, his purpose is even in his family name. That's amazing. So yeah. And there are some other people like Peter Wohlleben, and they just talk about their emotions and their contracts and what they can do for us and how they communicate. So I was very, very, very excited to also read that you do tree communication. And I'm wondering, what are some misconceptions that people have about tree communication, and how do you address them?
Well, I think the biggest hurdle right now is just people can't quite go there. They just cannot understand or believe that a tree without a brain of some kind can communicate. So that's kind of part one, which, you know, I'm in the United States. There's a lot of people out here that just can't believe that. They won't believe that. And that's fine. You know, that's not my space. I just like to share what I get. But going back to everything is energy, and there's a consciousness in all things. Why can't we communicate with trees? They are so much more intelligent. Oh, scientifically proven, you know, more and more science is coming out about the consciousness of trees. And it's just a matter of, we're still picking up on their energy, right? The conversations or the way that the energy transfer occurs is the exact same between an animal and a tree. So there's no reason why we can't have conversations, receive healing or messages from the trees. And so that's kind of what I just say. So just be open-minded. It's all energy. They're beings. We're here. We're directly connected to nature. We are nature. It just seems silly that we wouldn't be able to connect in. Yeah. So, you know, I don't try to push or force my thoughts on people. I just like to share and inspire, hopefully, as for someone.
I think that's the way forward. And I'm a big believer, when we walk our path and when we follow those heart tugs, that people will come along the way that will align with what we are marching for. And some might have never heard of like tree communication, but they get into it for you. Some might already be open and, you know, talk to everything. So I think it's like, you know, on both sides of the spectrum. I'm also wondering, have you noticed any similarities between animal communication and tree communication?
Similarities in what regard?
Yeah, that's a good question too. More in like how the information comes to you, like is it, or maybe even how the information feels, the energy.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I'll just say the way the information comes to me is the exact same. I'm very clairaudient. That is my strength. So I really do consider myself a channel, and I go through automatic writing to get longer messages. But they still do the same thing. You know, they have that ability to send love and healing and create those emotional responses, even though it might come out of the blue. So the conversations and connections, at least in that capacity, is the exact same. Mm-hmm. I do find that trees are, and it depends on how old they are, what kind of ecosystem they live in, whether they're part of an old growth forest or come from a container at a garden center and non-native. It just depends. Every single one of them has their own unique personality. And I think that's something people don't quite understand is like, yes, all individual trees have their own unique personality, but the older ones, they are probably my favorite ones to communicate with because they have the ancient wisdom of place. And so when it comes to just kind of what kind of information can we get from the animals versus the trees, I find this is kind of a big one where you can find the, you can go through the Akashics. They have the memory of place. They share the wisdom through their generations and they can help us. They can share that information with us and how we can move forward in the most sustainable and practical way in relationship with the trees. I would say that's kind of a big one. And they have an ecosystem perspective. So, you know, kind of leaning back into that science space, how can we work with the trees for an entire ecosystem? What do the trees need? What do they want? They can tell us about the soils. They can tell us about the air. You know, it's just that kind of information because their feet and their energy literally is connected to everything down below. We just have to ask. And I think that's probably the biggest difference within like what kind of information can we receive. Otherwise, the conversations or the communication style is the same.
What is one of the biggest lessons about love that you have learned from trees?
Oh boy. Gosh. How do I want to answer that? I wasn't expecting that question.
Me neither. Me neither. I was just like, wow, just I really need to know that.
Yeah. Okay, the biggest lesson that I've learned is that the language of the universe is through love. And that's really what the trees have taught me. You know, when you are in the heart space, when you are full of gratitude, that's basically giving you a golden key to unlock your heart space and live within that frequency of love, which will automatically connect you to the consciousness of all things and beings. And that is something that the trees have taught me more so than the animals. That, and in respect to kind of living in that heart space and being full of gratitude, a lot of the trees have been communicating to me that they love us so much and they want to help us, but there is a lack of return of energy. And so just kind of to think about like your own personal space, when you give too much of yourself, it's like that term, oh, my cup is half empty. You know, well, the trees and the ecosystems are saying the same thing. It's like our cups are not even half empty. They're almost like dry. And what they mean by that is, you know, people have taken advantage of the natural world for so long without giving in return to fill that cup back up. It's like everything is a little bit weaker. All of the plants and animals are weaker because of that. And so circling back around to love, if we could just kind of stop taking and turn it back around to them and just say thank you and send mm-hmm. them love, that will help them fill their cup back up, which will in turn help them give back to us, right? It's that kind of figure eight of energetics or energetic exchange. And so it's just that one track of love can needs to be reciprocated back and forth mm-hmm. instead of just one way
for it to be lesson. Full circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something too that they have really shown me through working with the land is just we need to give back more.
So one of the simple ways that you just said to give back is to thank them. Are there any other things that, you know, individuals on a daily basis can do, maybe even some that live in larger cities where there is not as much nature as well?
Yeah, larger cities, I will be the first one to say that I try to stay away from them. So mm-hmm. I might not be the best person to ask due to lack of experience. But just as a general reminder, there's nature everywhere. The sky, the mm-hmm. buildings around us are built from nature. Like my desk has wood. That is still nature, even though it is not necessarily in the forest still. Ants, spiders, the little mm-hmm. weeds coming out of the cracks, you know, nature is everywhere. So if you do live in a bigger city, I think one of the best things you can do is just start to acknowledge the little tiny pieces of nature all around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then also learn about the natural flora and fauna within your space, whether that be in the cityscape or even the larger landscape or just your state or country in general. Just kind of learning about the native animals and plants is helpful and beneficial. And then just sending love and gratitude. When you mm-hmm. go outside and look at the sky, just say, oh, it's a beautiful day, even if it's cloudy and rainy, or I'm so happy mm-hmm. to be able to breathe fresh air. That is also nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dirt under your feet, everything is nature. We yeah. just have to see it. And so just give gratitude for the use of their bodies and the materials and the minerals for one.
Mm-hmm.
And then try to seek out the little bits of nature and little animals that are all around.
I love that. I have never thought about it this way, to be like, oh, the building I'm in, like the desk I'm writing on, the little ants that come through in spring. You know, it's just because when we say, oh, we want to connect to nature, like most people think like mountains, woods, and just to know, like it's also on the smaller scale and that we reconnect. And I think gratitude is just one of the biggest ways of filling cups up, our own and also of our environment. And it's also one of the most healing ways for our bodies, our mind, our soul, spirits, like just everything. Which brings me to the next question. What do you personally do when you feel disconnected? And also, how do you feel when you're connected? And also, how do you feel when you're not connected? And one thing I want to bring in, after my grandmother passed away a few years back, I read this book by Paulo Coelho, and I felt so disconnected from God. I felt so disconnected from everything. And he wrote in his book, we are never disconnected, we are merely distracted. And this, I was crying so much out of gratitude that this book found me, because it was exactly what I wanted to or needed to hear, not wanted, but needed to hear, that I'm not disconnected. I am just right now distracted with, you know, obviously everything happening, but it's just a matter of like noise canceling and sitting with what is to really like feel that connection again. So I just want to point that out when I said disconnected and connected.
Yes, this is such a great question. And I know people experience this in their own way. Mm-hmm. For me, when I like that distracted, when I'm distracted, because that's what it is. You know, we all have lives in this world that require our attention and our stress and, you know, the adult aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
When I get too deep into that space without being intentional, I get really cranky. I have an alter ego and she is not very nice. She's kind of rude and mean. And so when I feel her kind of coming out, it's like, okay, Kara, you got to take a step back. You're obviously like too focused here. We need to take a step back, reground. And what I personally do is I am really fortunate. I have a really lovely wildflower garden that I've been working really hard on for the past 4 years. And I'll just go out there and walk my little path. I mean, it takes literally maybe a minute total, depending on how distracted I get with the bees and stuff. But I'll just take my little loop around my garden and I'll start to really look at what has shifted or changed within the last 24 hours. I mean, plants change so fast. Mm-hmm. And so to just see the differences of what one plant did versus yesterday, or what kind of insects are in the space, you know, what kind of bees are there, what kind of butterflies are fluttering around. And so it really brings my attention into the present moment. And that to me is key. Just finding nature, being outside, breathing the fresh air. Now I know that taking a garden tour isn't always an option, especially where I live, where it's like 6 months of snow. And sometimes it's just really cold outside. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm not interested in that aspect, I will just take myself back and I'll start breathing. And when I do that, I will intentionally breathe into my lower abdomen and I'll feel within my heart space and kind of recenter. And just like, it's literally just bringing my awareness into my body. And that seems to kind of help reconnect me, reground me, and kick that alter ego out.
It's great that you brought up the breathing and dropping into your body, because I always imagine when someone is distracted, disconnected, however you want to call it, is our body is here, our mind is in a different place, our soul might even be in a different place as well. And then just now imagine how far they are apart. And I think the very first is to bring everything back to where we are right now. And that's where our body is. So I also think one of the quickest ways, if we feel too cold to go outside, or if it's not possible, is to feel even the soles of our feet, or our shoulders, our jaw, or whatever it is, just to like drop into our body. So I'm so glad you brought that up. You have a hobby farm full of rescues. Obviously you have. You not just have a flower garden, but you also have a farm full of rescues. And I want to say, I didn't call it hobby, but that's how it's written on your, because I'm sure it's not hobby. It's like full on. What inspired you to create such a sanctuary? Like, did the animals talk to you and say, hey, we want to live with you? Or how did that work?
Oh my gosh. I will tell you, it was never intentional. Oh gosh, how did we start this? A long time ago. Okay, let's see. We're about 15 or so years ago. I don't even know. It was a long time ago. I got my first horse. He was a rescue. And he was my baby. So he was really the first rescue that I had as an adult. And I thought, well, he needs a friend, you know. He can't just be by himself. And so eventually I ended up adopting an old thoroughbred who just needed a new home. And so he came into my space. Lovely, lovely horse. And then what ended up happening was I also decided I needed a dog, because I moved from my family's house and I always had a dog with me and I felt lonely without my dog. So I adopted a dog. And then we kind of sat in this like three-party zone for a while. It was just me and the three animals. And then what ended up happening was, down the line, the older thoroughbred ended up dying. And I thought, well, my horse needs a friend. So I found this rescue goat. My goodness, he lived in the worst environment. So I brought him home, and then my horse didn't like him. So I got the goat a friend. I mean, this is ridiculous. I know how ridiculous this sounds. But, you know, I always go for the rescue animals, right? That's just kind of my thing. And so I brought in this rescue goat, and then we had them. And then my horse was still lonely. It's like, okay, we still need another horse. So we brought in another old horse that was an old cowboy horse that just needed a new home. And then we were good for a little while. We were good. And then what ended up happening was, this gal, she was my farm sitter when I would go out of town. She called me one night and said, I have a goat. He's freezing to death. I don't know what to do. And I was like, bring him over. And so I ended up keeping him because his rumen wasn't quite developed. And so he needed some intensive care for a while. And so that was like how I ended up with all of my hoofed animals. But eventually, my neighbor was just like, so you don't eat your animals, or, you know, you just seem to have a bunch of rescues, huh? And I'm like, yeah, what of it? And he's like, well, I have all these chickens. They're old. They don't really lay. And then he like threw them over the fence. I'm like, okay, I guess they're mine. And so now we have rescue chickens. I mean, it just goes this way. And then I think it was last year, I said, no more animals. I am at full capacity. And then this was my mistake right here. I said, if an animal is meant to be in my life, it will have to be on my doorstep. I am not going to go looking. Like, I put up that wall, and I kid you not, like a week later, this little rabbit shows up on my doorstep. I had been watching him kind of in the back. We have 100 acres in the back. My neighbor does. And I had seen him. I'm like, okay, not my problem, right? I can't go get him. He's obviously domestic. And then like the next day, there he is on my front porch. And now he lives with my chickens. And so it's just like, here we are.
Oh my God. This is the most hilarious story.
Yeah, so that's it's just how it is. Hopefully, and I will put this out there right now, no more animals right now, unless they need my help. But
I think that unless they need my help, maybe you should also like take this back quickly.
I know. Well, the thing is like, it's ridiculous. So this winter, there was this pigeon and he was riding on my goat. I think he had fledged or something, but it was so, so cold out and he couldn't get back up in his nest and I couldn't put him back up there. So negative 30 degrees and this little pigeon is trying to hang out in the hay of my barn. I'm like, no, all right, come here, buddy. So I brought him and his sister in. And so we had pigeons for a while. And then I'm like, no, you have to go. You have to go back and merge into here with your family. It's just things like that happen, you know? It
comes in handy. You're an animal communicator.
It does help, yeah.
Oh my God. This is amazing. Do you know The Gentle Barn by any chance?
Yeah, yeah.
So we had Ellie Lax on, and she shared how she like had a cow at home for 9 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I'm like, wow, you guys are just amazing. It's, yeah. And have you, do people visit your, like people, not animals, like visit your, your farm, or how does it work?
We're not technically like a sanctuary or anything like that. We just are our own entity. Like we are our own thing. So,
LLC.
We're not a nonprofit. So everybody kind of just hangs out and it's just like a funny farm world. And so we don't do tours or anything like that. But I do use my animals in my animal communication program. Mm-hmm. So they help teach the students how to connect in and learn how to communicate.
These are all your assistants. And you pick them in food.
Yeah. That way there's that exchange of energy, right? Yeah.
This is so hilarious. What state do you live in, Kara?
I'm in Montana.
Oh, what a bummer. I'm in California. I wish I was close. One day, if I ever come to Montana, I'll call you because I want to visit all your, I mean, you as well, but I really want to visit also all your animals. I'm like, so cool.
You're more than welcome. You'll have to come check out this state.
I need to be on your doorstep.
Hi, I'm here. Okay. You can come in.
Don't worry, I didn't bring it. I brought my dog, but I'll take it with me again. Kara, we always wrap up a conversation with a little pet Q&A. The dog you talked about earlier, what is his name?
Trekker.
I love that. What is one of the many reasons you're grateful for him?
Yes, he has taught me patience in a way that I didn't know I could be patient with an animal that was so complicated. Compassion for an animal that I don't, our personalities really actually don't mesh well. So, he challenges in me in ways that I never expected to be challenged, and so I'm really grateful for him as a teacher to show me a new perspective and outlook, and that I can be stronger than I ever thought I was, especially because we have gone through a lot of stuff together. He used to attack my older dog and it just tore me apart. And so I really resented him for a long time. But I also learned to love him anyways for who he truly is and respect him as an individual. And so he's taught me just a new way of looking at things, a new way of understanding where an animal might be coming from and recognizing them as their own unique being, and to honor them in that way.
Wow. Yeah, it really shows what a big heart you have working through all the layers of fear he has. It's, but he also found you. Like he probably thought, out of all the people that live in the US, the only person that possibly could help me is Kara. Yeah, he's probably like, she will talk to me, she will like help me. I have so many friends there. 100%.
Yeah, he's a good boy. He really is. He's such a sweetheart. You just have to kind of get past that initial angst.
And if you, I always ask if you could ask one question, but you ask him already probably all the time questions. But what is the one, like one of the most present questions you are asking him?
Really, how I can best support him. Those are the questions I'm asking him the most right now. How can I support you and give you? He is getting older at this point. I mean, he's not technically a senior yet, but the questions I'm asking him, like, how can I best support you on your soul mission, on your soul progression? And it's been really interesting. He really is just like, I'm doing okay. We're still kind of working on our contract as far as soul progression goes. I mean, he's shown me, I guess the way that he shows it to me is like a tiny little egg hatching, and now he's like, I don't know why he's using a big bird as a depiction, but he like cracks his egg. That's where he was when I got him, and now he's like this huge full-blown rooster type bird that he's showing me, and he's like, we're doing okay. Like, look at my soul progression. I'm this big bird now. So it's just really interesting to check in that capacity.
Does he check in with you as well, how he can support you on your soul journey?
He does, but he doesn't really talk to me about it. I just know that he's actively working with me. I do a lot of sessions with animals and land healing and things like that, and it's so funny because when I go into a more complicated session, it's like all of my animals just kind of flock around me. And I know they're part of the healing process, but he always is right under my feet. And I ask him, it's like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm giving you energy and I'm taking your energy in the good way. So there's that
Yeah, to
exchange
balance it
happening.
out.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, buddy, you're incredible. I never give him enough credit. So he doesn't really ask. I know he knows what he's doing, and all of my animals have full permission to kind of do what they feel called to do.
It's so beautiful how they are your spirit family and how they support you, because being a channel takes as much, as rewarding as it is, it takes a lot of energy to like stay within your energy, to cleanse yourself, to dial in, to work for things, and it's just so much. So it's it might also be one of the many reasons why the universe sent you so many animals, that you get all this support to, that you can be of service, and also that you stay healthy throughout that journey. I think that's also a really big thing. So, wow, I really love that. And let's wrap up with a funny question. What is one of the things he does where he thinks no one is watching him, but it's really embarrassing.
Okay, yes. He cracks me up. So we have our horse, right? Well, mm-hmm. our horse has no teeth, really. So I kind of just let him in my little grass patch that I have, just so he can kind of munch a little bit. Trekker will go out and, like, scarf up any horse poop that's left in the yard. And he'll just, like, inhale it as fast as possible because he's like, I don't need anybody to know I'm inhaling this. But then he, like, comes. This is really gross. I'm sorry. This is the route we're taking. He'll come inside and he'll just smell like horse poop. So proud of himself that nobody noticed. And then he's just so gassy and gross for the rest of the day. But you know that when I see him and I catch him in the act, he's like, I'm not doing anything. What are you talking about? And he tries to, like, avoid eye contact.
It is so funny. I love that.
Guilty pleasures of a dog, right?
Oh my God. Yeah, it's dogs are just, I mean, any animal, if they think they're not watched, it is so funny how their sneaky personality comes through and the little naughty side. It's just hilarious. That's why I love this question, because there's always something so funny people are sharing.
Yep. Well, animals are so silly.
Kara, I want to thank you so much for your time and for your wisdom. And also, I want to share one thing which I read, and I think just throughout the conversation, I think people see how much you are contributing to your hope. And it is my hope that one day we can all coexist in a world where earth, animals, nature, and spirit are all part of the conversation. And I want to really thank you, and I'm so grateful, and my cup is very full, to see how much you are helping all of us, that we are part of the conversation. And thank you so much for sharing this gift and light with our Purple Stars family. And I hope we'll have you back on, because there's so much we need to follow up.
Oh my goodness. Yes, thank you so much for this conversation today. I too feel like we could talk for days. And the energy is totally balanced in the way it should be. So just thank you for reaching out and connecting with me.
Thank you so much. It's a wrap for today, everyone. If you loved the conversation as much as we did, please share it with your friends and your family, with your community. And don't forget to tag us and also Kara to keep the conversation going. And we see you next Wednesday.